Welcome today's guest, Yasuna Senekis, who I've known for some time. Some of you know him as Jason. I know him as Yasunas. A good friend, somebody who is very active in civil society in Cyprus, very active in one particular field of interest, and that's road safety, which is a big matter in Cyprus. Am I right?
Yeah, that's true. Thanks for the invitation. Thank you for giving me the time. And it's great to be with you. And I think we've got a lot to discuss. Mm-hmm. And we've been through a lot in the last years.
Look, I've worked with you both in a professional capacity at my previous employment, and I've worked with you in a private capacity as a civil society activist, and I've always been impressed by your dedication, your expertise, your willingness to go over and above not just your professional career, but your personal life to contribute to the improvement of road safety in Cyprus. Not just road safety, but mobility and other issues related to getting around safely on mm-hmm. this island. I think it's safe to say in the last 4 or 5 years that we've been closely working together that we've seen some improvements, albeit they've been incredibly slow. Perhaps some setbacks along the way. One that we can obviously point out is road cameras disappearing in 2006. Yeah, 2006, and they're not reappearing until last year, was it, or the year before?
Yeah, a couple of years ago.
Yeah, so it took them over a decade. Yeah. Well over a decade.
14, 15 years, yeah.
14, 15 years to contribute to the reestablishment of road safety cameras. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about how your journey began with road safety. How did you go from Yasunas on the block to Yasunas on the streets?
Yeah, it was. I think what changed everything was what got me radicalized. And I say that copying Tom Flood, who is a great persona in road safety on social media. And I think what got me radicalized is when my son was born in 2014. Mm-hmm. And I started looking for a car seat, a safe way to drive around cities. And of course, looking for pedestrian paths to walk around with him in the stroller. So I think that was the turning point of me getting interested about road safety. The first months, maybe a couple of years, I was focused on safety of children in cars. So it was very, very interesting for me to find a way to get people to know what the risks are when moving around with children in a car, especially babies. And from there on, I think, I was actually following the way, my son was growing. So as his age was changing, of course, things were changing in how we move around. Then we had to walk around the city. Then we had to get our first bike and the first scooter. So things changed and my interests keep changing. But I think the main thing that happened was that I started demanding a change in the neighborhoods that we were living, and then in the municipality, and then in the whole city.
Let me just take a step back. Let's start from the start. You said that it was to do with the car seats for your child. Now, as far as I understand, that when a child is born in Cyprus, you're not allowed to take it home unless you have a car seat in your car. Is that true?
That's true. Yeah. That's true, but the issue is that you might have a car seat, but you're not using it correctly. So you mm-hmm. can't have a car seat and just, put the baby inside without securing it properly.
I read a horrific statistic that in the Western world, where car seats are staples and well and truly established and required by law, something like 70%, if I'm not mistaken, aren't installed correctly, which moved the Australian authorities that I know of to every few months. They do free car seat installations. Also, when you put a car seat in your car the first time, it has to be done by a professional. It can't be done by yourself, and you get a certificate. Now, some might say, oh, it's just click and play. We'll just plug it into the ISOFIX. But a lot of people don't realize that it's not as simple as that. Now, I think in Cyprus, we're probably light years away from the authorities making that a law and having free installation sessions. But it was a good step having the rule of a car seat in the car before you take your baby home. But coming back to your particular example, why not just have the mum sitting in the back seat holding the child? They yeah, can't hold the child as well as a seatbelt?
Yeah, that thing is the perception. I mean, this is the perception of risks that some people still have in Cyprus. So people still think that it's okay to move around for a short distance while sitting, having a baby sitting on your lap in the back seat while wearing a seatbelt. Yeah. And or you can, let's say, turn the baby around in the first 6 months, move the car seat instead of rear facing to forward facing, without understanding the changes and the risks that come with that move. So I think it's more of a lack of education, a lack of information that people don't get from the authorities and from the public and from the doctors. Mm-hmm. And of course, you're right that we don't have a professional capacity, people with professional capacity in terms of installing and checking car seats. And I'm sure that neither the police have the capacity to do the correct checks required when they, let's say, stop a car and there's a baby inside and you need to check.
Well, I think you've actually gone a little bit further forward than where Cyprus is. You're talking about police checking the actual car seat if it's correct in the vehicle. We're at a stage in Cyprus where we're talking about if there is a car seat in the vehicle.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't tell you the number of times I've seen children jumping around the back seat of a car, or at best sitting without a car seat and maybe a seatbelt around their neck, for example. I have to be fair to Cypriots that it's a lot to do with lack of education, lack of awareness. They haven't been given the opportunity to understand the realities and the science behind kinetics of a vehicle. And like, I always come up with this argument with friends where if you were given a 10th century Ming Dynasty Chinese vase worth 50,000 euros, and I asked you, how are you going to transfer this from the shop home? Will you leave it loose in the boot? Will you sit it on your lap? What would you do? Consistently, people would tell me that they'll put it in the back seat and put a seatbelt around it. Then I pause and I ask them, is your child worth less? And the penny drops.
Yeah.
I mean, they look at me and they're like, oh.
Yeah.
That suddenly kinetics makes sense.
There's a much simpler example. And there was a PSA, an advertisement, let's say, about it. And it was a family and the mother made a cake. I know how that sounds, but it was like 10 years ago. So it was considered okay for the mother to cook and, you know, without engaging the rest of... the mother made the cake and they were going to visit the grandparents. So she was holding the cake and she was sitting in the car. And suddenly the father was speeding. He was going over the limit. And she was like, slow down. I mean, you know, I'm holding a cake. And it was like a couple of occasions where he was trying to not fall in a, you know, not move around, you know, and speed, etc. So the conclusion was that, you know, is a cake really the reason why you should follow the speed limit or be more careful? I mean, why don't you do it on a daily basis with the children being in the car? So, I think it comes back to the perception of risk. I mean, people haven't had the chance to find out and to know what's going to happen in a 30-kilometer crash, in a 50-kilometer crash. They consider that such speeds are safe.
Yeah.
Even without a seatbelt, even in a 30-year-old car without ABS or airbags, even without a car seat for children. So I think that this would make a big change in the minds of people.
Well, they say that they feel safe if they're traveling at 20, 30, 40 kilometers an hour. What's the fastest speed a human can run? Is it 15 kilometers an hour or 20?
It should be around 20.
Yeah. So the Usain Bolt, the fastest man on earth, I assume he still is, but if he was running and went straight into a wall, would he not be injured?
Yeah, and it's not only...
It's not just your speed, it's the oncoming traffic speed as well,
and
which doubles.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's where you crash, it's how you sit in a car, is what you have around you, because you're in a metal cage. Mm-hmm. Your body would hit on the roof, on the steering wheel, on glass. I mean, you don't know what's going to happen. So it's an uncontrolled environment, and you don't know how you're going to end up without being in a car seat with a seat belt. So I think what's missing here is not the police going around fining people but it's about the government, the police, the Ministry of Education, the Ministry of Transport, giving this information to people so that they can decide in the best way possible. So having the information available and making their decisions on the correct basis.
It's a good argument you make that somebody will make an informed decision as to their safety once they're aware of the facts. Let's say you have somebody that just does not care. Where do we sit, though, with protecting the others on the road? Is that not where law enforcement and fining plays a role?
Of course, of course. Law enforcement is a key.
Yeah.
It's a key action into improving road safety and keeping everyone safe. Yeah.
A lot of people think that road safety is just about cash and governments making money and police making money. And I mean, many will argue, and sometimes I'm sympathetic to their argument, where they say, well, they set themselves up on some very ambiguous roads and, you know, low trafficked areas or areas where there's not many people, and they sit there fining us. But then where there are people, where there's accidents all the time, there's no police there. Now, I'm not going to go into the details of that, because I hear this argument all around the world. What we are hearing in Cyprus at the moment is everyone's angst about the traffic cameras at the intersections that are fining people for touching the white line, for going through the red light. What are your thoughts on that? Is it helping the place be safer? Is it just making it safer at that particular intersection? What's the science saying?
Yeah, I understand what people are saying, and it's I think it's a result of the mistakes that have been made through the process of installing and operating the cameras.
Mm-hmm.
So there have been a lot of mistakes since 2020 in terms of information, education, enforcement, the way they were installed, the issue with sending the fines, the issue with getting the fines paid.
Mm-hmm.
We have an issue with traffic lights, with the right turn not being correct. I mean, it's still not operating correctly. And we are in 2024 and they haven't managed to get a proper traffic light, you know, operating for the people to know when they're allowed to turn or not. And I think that these mistakes have made people they're not believing that the goal of the system is to get
to save lives.
Yeah, to save lives, to improve road safety, but it's to trap people and get more fines issued. So I can understand the reactions, and I see the mistakes that have been made. So even though cameras, speed cameras, and especially red light cameras are one of the best tools to improve road safety in specific locations, but in the road network in general, especially when you have cameras that are not stationed in traffic lights. So you have a bigger effect when the driver doesn't know where a camera might appear.
So you're talking about the mobile cameras.
Yeah,
so,
the mobile cameras. Yeah.
So they can be random. It's consistently random.
Yeah. Yeah. I know that they have some hundreds of positions where police asks the company to put the mobile cameras, and they keep changing them on a weekly or monthly basis, so people don't know where they will appear. So these cameras have a much bigger effect than the cameras that are stationed in traffic lights. So it's definitely one of the best tools, but unfortunately, we have managed to lower the expectations we have from it. And we have also managed not to operate it correctly. So we have these reactions from people that we go again back to the issue that they don't have the information to know how these cameras will work. What are the results in the specific positions in specific places? So if they knew what happened with average speed, let's say, if they knew what happened with red light violation, if they knew the percentage of drivers exceeding the speed limit, if they knew the dangers of exceeding the speed limit by 5 or 10 kilometers, people would be more easier for them to accept that this is a new type of enforcement. It's been around for decades. We're putting it now, we're using it in Cyprus. So it's about time for us to move ahead. And another issue is that we haven't had this type of enforcement for decades. So people were not fined for crossing the pedestrian line. They were not fined for violating red traffic, the red light. So you never saw police standing in crossroads checking if people are violating the traffic light. So these are changing, and it's bringing this reaction. So
look, and you can't expect a police force to be out on the street stopping everyone that's on the mobile, everyone that's going through a red light, everyone that's speeding, everyone that's over the alcohol limit. What you can expect, though, of the law enforcement is to educate, is to spread the word, is to make it user-friendly and understandable. You need to regain the people's trust, because that's one of the biggest things. Like, I mean, if you don't trust your law enforcement, then that leads to other issues, not just road safety.
Yeah.
So what I think also needs to happen is that other than the enforcement actually being enforced, the education has to start being more aggressive. We need to start seeing police in schools doing seminars. I'm going to ask you in a minute to tell us a little bit about what CEDID is, where you're working, what they do. But I think also we need to see the mass media sharing the knowledge. For example, you're aware of the commercials they have in Australia, for example, where it's little films, like maybe half a minute long, where it shows standard daily scenes and what happens when an accident happens. Yeah. And the consequence, and this is the big word I want to put forward, consequence, because Cyprus seems to be not very risk averse. And I think that's because people don't understand the consequences. And that's because it hasn't been shared. Like, we think, okay, you have a car accident, some broken glass, and maybe I'll bump my arm. People don't understand the consequence of being in a wheelchair or attending a funeral or losing a loved one, or the cost, the financial cost of an accident, even if, touch wood, someone's not injured. So I know that in the 80s and 90s, some of these commercials were aired in Cyprus, and the radio television authorities were made to remove these ads because it was upsetting people.
Yeah.
And I still to this day can't comprehend what they mean by these commercials were upsetting people. What's worse, attending a funeral or upset at an ad that maybe saved some lives, you know?
The thing is that what's different in other countries, and especially Australia, which we know, you know, some things about how they deal with road safety, is this the systemic approach. I mean, in Australia, authorities have recognized their responsibility in road safety, and they're taking the measures required for them to do what's needed to be done. So they are not putting the blame on drivers. So these advertisements, these PSAs, these public service announcements, it's basically showing people, educating people. It's about educating people. Yeah. So they no longer use this horror or bloody scenes or, let's say, trying to scare people. They're using more of an educational approach in this advertisement. So the thing there is what you said earlier, is that people trust, I mean, they trust more their authorities. So they know that they are not trying to blame them. They're not trying to put the blame on drivers and on victims. They know that their authorities have recognized their responsibility. So they have the right to, you know, ask people to be more responsible. Mm-hmm. What's different in Cyprus is that we have a state and we're still in the traditional approach, which has been abandoned like 50, 60 years ago in other countries, where the driver and the victim is to blame.
Yep.
And we're only focused on changing their behavior. So what we are trying to do in Cyprus, what the authorities are trying to do in Cyprus, is to basically change the behavior of people to match a failing transport system.
I understand that, because just if I may jump in there, what you said is very interesting, because I've always said that if every Cypriot started driving spectacular, started being role models, our roads do not match that behavior. We have broken gutters, unsealed main roads. We have roads that when it rains, flood, and they're in main urban areas. When it's wet, you can't see the lines. I mean, I'm not going to go into potholes and whatnot, but we have so many obstructions, obstacles. You are constantly looking forward, back, left, right, because mm-hmm. there's always something happening. And that's just the urban areas. Now let's go into the rural areas where we start getting goats on the road and things like this, or stray cats and stray dogs. And this does come back to behavior, all the footpaths, as we know, are covered with cars. Yeah. So pedestrians, and then we have, I'm startled by the number of pedestrians that are hit and killed or injured in this country. Because where there is a footpath, more often than not, there are cars, rubbish bins, cafe tables, umbrellas, illegal garages. So people are walking on the road, and especially the elderly, especially children. And this is what's happening, where you got the drivers who, at their best, can't spot every obstacle on the road.
Yeah.
And we're seeing these injuries of students and elderly, for example. Then we have the school crossings. Okay. Any crossing.
Yeah.
I mean, it bewilders me that the light is red, people stop, the person starts crossing, and once they've passed the car and they've moved on to the other half of the crossing, that car starts moving. Yeah. Meanwhile, the person is still in the intersection and the light is still red. I mean, only education can help there, because you can sit at every crossing and enforce the law. But no, until they understand what it means to stop at a crossing and allow these children that are running the randomness of the world to occur in front of them, it's a big project. But speaking of big project, I was very impressed with the outreach to the Australian authorities and experts in the last few years. And I know that Monash University Accident Research Centre, MUAC, actually came to Cyprus on a couple of occasions and worked with you and Syridis and the authorities. Tell us a little bit about what happened with this best practice sharing and these roundtables and international conferences that we had with them.
Yeah.
Yep.
You might not believe it, but it's almost been like 5 years ago. I mean, I remember the first visit of Monash was in May 2019, and then we had the Road Safety Forum in October 2019, where mm-hmm. a team of experts from Monash, scientists mm-hmm. with, I would say, around 200 years of experience in road safety mm-hmm. Research and application and management. So they came here to Cyprus, and we gathered all the authorities and the stakeholders in 3-day events, where these roundtables ended up with a conclusion paper mm-hmm. that the Australians, the scientists, gave to the authorities. And it was the High Commission and the University Syridis. At that point, I was working at the bank, so I was part of the civil society engaged, and then at that time. So what happened is we had this paper, the conclusions, their consultation to the local authorities. And as always, this ended up in some drawer in ministries that, and most of the ideas and the conclusions were not used properly. We had some of the conclusions included in the road safety strategy of Cyprus for 2021 to 2030. So there's a decade strategy in mm-hmm. some another drawer that it's we have sitting around. So some of the ideas of the proposals of the scientists were included in that paper in the strategy, but unfortunately this is also not being implemented properly. It's been since 2000, it was approved in September 2020, now we have March, almost March of 2024, and I haven't seen the results of these first three years of the implementation. It was a huge project, and what scientists from Australia came here to say was that what we needed to do immediately was to change the approach that I spoke of earlier. Yep. So they realized that the police, the authorities, the ministries are still blaming the users.
It's the blame game.
So, yeah. And I remember the first roundtable we had in May 2019, it was just the police and the head of Monash, of Newark at that point.
Yep.
And she was sitting for 3 or 4 hours listening to police officers from all over Cyprus saying what they're doing on road safety, how they see the issues, what are the problems, what are the challenges. And she was like, okay, she was sitting around, and at around 2 o'clock in the afternoon, she said, okay, I'm sitting here since 9 o'clock in the morning, and I hear you blaming drivers, blaming victims. And she used a specific video from New Zealand, I think, mm-hmm. it was at that point, where or Australia, that it showed this systemic approach that yep. you cannot blame the driver for making that last second mistake, or even for breaking the law at mm-hmm. that specific moment and causing a crash. So I wish that they had taken her more seriously. And then in October, they also did the same things for 3 days. Mm-hmm. They tried to convince people in Cyprus that road safety management is not just behavior-based. We need to change the things that are all around us. I mean, safe cars, safe roads, safe users. We want to have safe speeds. And we also want to have a post-crash response. We need to improve the response we have from the ambulance service, the fire service, and the police after a crash happens. So it's sad to say that it's been 5 years and I haven't noticed a huge difference in what happened. And most of the changes and most of the actions could have been easily implemented without spending huge amounts of money.
What do you think is to blame for this? What do you think is to blame for this? I don't know. Is it reluctance? Is it, I won't say laziness, but is it a fear of change? Is it incapability to change? Is it, we can't say it's lack of staff because we know that they're well staffed.
Yeah.
We have politicians making promises. I mean, we have elections in a few months' time, and just to give one example, at the top of my head, Haralambos Brunzos, who's a candidate for the Nicosia mayorship, he's made a little video that's on social media now where he's talking about fixing the footpaths and the lighting on the streets of Nicosia at night and making the place more mobility friendly. So promises are made.
Yeah.
What is hindering delivering on these changes?
Seeing the world from the inside, you know, being in the ministry for 11 months.
It's worth noting that Yasunas was for 11 months in the Ministry of Justice and Public Order during Minister Emily Yolitis' time. He was an advisor to the ministry.
For road safety.
For road safety, yes, sorry, go on.
I think what's missing is we're missing an independent authority for road safety. So what that means is that we don't have a centralized approach in managing road safety. So we have different people and different authorities and different ministries doing their stuff on road safety without coordination. So this is missing. And you mentioned police earlier. We know that police go to elementary schools and they give like a speech for once a year for 40 minutes. I mean, that's the education we get in schools. And this is the same that happens in secondary education. We know that the Ministry of Transport is creating some plans for buying new cars. We know that the Ministry of Education is trying to include transportation education in the curriculum of some subjects. We know that the Ministry of Justice is dealing with the police are dealing with fines and penalties, etc. We know that justice are doing some things in terms of putting people away, getting people out of the streets when they're dangerous. But it doesn't seem to be a coordinated effort. And it doesn't seem to have a plan, a goal, a long-term goal, not even a short-term goal.
That's interesting because, like, when I was volunteering for a particular NGO, I went and sat in on the road safety committees where different ministries, so there's representation from education, from justice, from all different ministries that were there, communications and works, you name it. And they sat there and they talked and they talked and they talked. And I remember thinking, this was before the Australian experts had come to Cyprus. I remember thinking vividly that this is not going to go anywhere. This is going back 7-8 years now. In my previous employment, I was lucky where I had bosses that were very keen to get involved and channel some of my professional career into this sector. Mm. So I was very happy about that and very proud of them for doing that. You have civilians, people like Lena Catellari, who unfortunately lost her son many years ago to a road incident, who volunteer their time and go around speaking to army conscripts and schools and whatnot. There are passionate people out there. There are dedicated people out there. But what you said, the lack of coordination, it is key. It's pivotal to progress and change and improvement. And I think what you said is very important, that we don't have an independent body. Something like Vic Roads or the TAC, Transport Accident Commission in Australia, or even academic groups like the MUARC. Mm-hmm. Now, in Cyprus, I'm very proud of CERIDES, Centre of Excellence in Risk and Decision Sciences.
Sciences,
yeah. At the European University. It's headed by Dr. George Boustros, who's your boss. I'm very impressed with the work that goes on there. Now, it's not just with road safety. It's also with fires and crisis management and whatnot. That, for me, is a good start. I would like to see something like CERIDES or an offshoot of CERIDES coupled with government and authorities and the police and whatnot, create this independent body. Because, as you said, without coordination, we're going to get nowhere. We're going to keep spilling blood on the roads. I'm going to cut myself off there because I said spilling blood on the roads. Now, I've seen in the press lately everyone bragging about the lowered death rate the last decade. It's gone down. It's halved. Why has the road toll gone down? Now, you and I both know that the roads are not safer. I mean, the things we're seeing on the roads of Cyprus, sometimes I'm convinced it's getting worse. Why are less people dying? Is that because there's more traffic, so people are going slower? Is it that the cars are more have improved? There's airbags left, right, and center in a car now. What's the difference? What's changed and death toll's gone down?
I mean, if we compare it since 2013 to 2022, we had an average of 50 people killed on our roads every year. So the last 3 years, there's been a significant decrease. And it seems that we have a continuous decrease in terms of people killed. At the same time, we have a significant decrease in people seriously injured in road crashes, which is very, very important because mm-hmm. it's what you said earlier. People who are seriously injured then have to face pain and expenses. And
not just them, but suffer. The family as well, exactly. And society. I mean, I remember the Aussies were talking about the dollar figure on each injury and each death to a state. Yeah.
Yeah.
We hear about the death toll, but we don't hear about the injury toll, whether it's serious or not serious.
It's a very big issue. I mean, and the thing is that in Cyprus, I mean, the difference is can change in a matter of days. Mm-hmm. I mean, we can have a week. We have lately in December, we had 11 people died on our streets in 25 days.
Yeah.
So balances can easily change from one week to another, from one month to the other.
Well, such a small population.
Exactly. And this is also an asterisk that the European Union puts on Cyprus and Malta and other small states, that these fluctuations might not be the way we see them in mm-hmm. bigger countries, that you have bigger figures, a bigger sample too.
Yeah, yeah.
So what we need to do is stop celebrating, let's say, stop celebrating this reduction mm-hmm. Without being sure that this is going to be sustained. Mm-hmm. So, and we saw what happened on New Year's Eve, where four people died in a crash. And I'm also very worried, and I know that you are also very worried, with a crash that will involve a bus full of people or a truck, a heavy crash that can cause a huge loss of lives.
You could have the entire death toll of Cyprus in 1 year, in one day, in one bus accident.
And we see it happening all the time in other countries. Mm-hmm. And the issue is that we're not taking the measures to avoid such a crash. And we've seen buses on fire with kids inside, with 40 kids inside.
We had quite September. A few this last year.
Exactly.
One after the other.
We have hundreds of crashes with trucks in the highway that could easily end up in a tragedy, in a serious tragedy. Mm-hmm. So what I'm saying is that we have a reduction. It's important. It mm-hmm. shows that something is happening. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty sure cameras have played a significant role in that reduction. But we need the data to make sure that it's this is true. I mean, we need to have open data. We need to know what's going on. This is public data. Citizens are paying for the cameras. We need to have in scientific organizations, in research centers, in universities, we need to have this data so that we can analyze it and give it back to the authorities, so they can communicate it to people and show them.
It's like you're not working against the authorities. Yeah. You'd want to work with them to help them do their job. Yeah.
And what you said earlier about Seridis, I mean, you know that the university and Seridis have made huge efforts to engage with local authorities and consult and be included in committees, etc. It's not happening. I mean, even the latest example was the creation of the council, a transport council, by the president of Cyprus. And I was very disappointed that none of the private universities were included in that council. So we have people, as you said, we have experts, we have scientists that can contribute in this effort, but they're being left out.
Why do you think they're being left out? Is it because we don't recognize and respect the quality of our scientific and academic personnel on the island? We don't trust our own universities? Or is it they just want to keep it in-house? What would the reason be? I mean, let's be honest. We've had this discussion privately in the past. Who doesn't want to save lives? Who doesn't want their kids to come home every day safely? Why would you avoid bringing in anybody that could help at least save one life? Why would you not? What would the reasoning be?
I think that's the million-dollar question. I mean, it doesn't make sense. We have made huge efforts to bring Australians here. Mm-hmm. I personally made efforts with Greece, with Mrs. Milona and mm-hmm. the Milona Foundation in Greece. I made personal efforts that took months to do, to get a meeting with the authorities in Spain.
Yep.
I even arranged a meeting, but the people from Cyprus never called back. We even got complaints from Australian scientists that people never replied to their emails. So, and we have the same thing in Cyprus. This is what we get. I mean, you know, as a people that we have some knowledge and we have some expertise and we know how, what's the proper way of doing road safety management, we would say the truth. And the ideas and the measures and the actions that we will propose, somebody needs to work to make them happen. And I think that this is what they're afraid of.
They should be proud of the expertise and the experts on the island, people like yourself included. For example, if I know that recently you're in southern France, and the road safety authorities that you met with there took you seriously and have engaged you, and you're doing some work with them now. I mean, France is willing to listen to Cypriots in the expertise sector of road safety. That, if that doesn't raise a flag for the Republic of Cyprus to take you guys seriously, then we have bigger issues.
Yeah, it's not only that. I mean, recently I got a call from a professor in university, professor, he's Greek. He's currently in Spain. And he gave me a call and he was trying to find ways to and give ideas to his local mayor in Greece to improve road safety in his hometown. So you can see that, you know, there is knowledge. And it's not just me, as you said. Yeah. We have tens of scientists and experts in different various sectors that can provide information and contribute. I mean, it could be psychology, it could be architecture, it could be transport, it could be whatever, it could be education, engineering. I mean, and we have so many private universities that you cannot just leave them out in a single decision and just use the University of Cyprus and some organized groups, and it doesn't make sense for me. I mean, why not have like a table, a room full of experts sharing their experience, their knowledge for free to end up with a plan to save lives? I mean, what would it cost anyone, for me or another private university employee or professor or researcher or whatever, or even someone coming from abroad to give us their opinion, take it seriously, and then try to...
Yeah, I mean, sometimes I wonder, like, we sometimes love to listen to foreigners, other times we like to ignore the foreigners. Sometimes we love to only listen to locals, sometimes we ignore the locals. When it comes to road safety, it seems that we're ignoring both the locals and the foreigners, which makes no sense. But like I keep saying, anyone who listens to the podcast or anyone that knows me personally, they keep hearing me say, this is such a small island with such a small population that is highly skilled, highly educated, and highly capable. We can overnight make massive changes. We are not Tokyo. We are not Moscow. We are not a huge place. We're not crowded Athens. We're not ancient Beirut. I mean, we are this amazingly small island that has everything. It's wealthy. It has the ability and the financial ability to make huge changes. Mm-hmm. It's not just in road safety, on all aspects. That's, again, coming back to the million-dollar question, it's frustrating for people like us that are active in civil society and in the professional realm to not be able to see things moving forward and knowing how easy it is for it to move forward. But... and here's where I'll defend Cyprus. Sometimes things change overnight when you least expect it. So I hope that at some moment in time, maybe after these elections, maybe anyone that's a candidate that's listening might like to take this serious and get involved. But hopefully we're going to look at a new era where maybe we're going to have some people willing to step up.
What I'm afraid of, Costa, is that in these specific subjects, things change after a massive tragedy.
Yes.
And this is what's going to cause change in Cyprus. And we shouldn't wait for this to happen.
And I say this every time one of these buses catches on fire these last few months, and every time we have these, like the accident on New Year's Eve, you know, it took an accident like that for so many people to be wiped out to then go and put traffic cameras at those lights. Yeah. Now, that's not the solution.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I hope we're wrong, and I hope we don't wait for the bus with 50 people on it to go through a primary school.
Mm-hmm.
I hope we don't wait for that moment. No, I don't want to jinx things, but I mean, let's hope that we are ahead of the ball and make the changes in advance.
Yeah.
And the authorities do need to step up. They need to work with civil society. They need to work with the universities and the experts. They need to work with the international community that's offering their services and instrumentalize these changes and save lives.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't cost anything.
No.
I mean, you can include everyone who's interested in a specific committee. I don't see why people are left out. And you can gather expertise, you can get plans ready, you can get research ready,
yep.
You can give people examples, you can use good practices from other countries. And the big issue is that people need to change the way they work in the public sector for this to happen. And this is not happening.
Yeah.
So we keep doing things like we did in 1990s. Mm. We keep building huge roads. We keep seeing cars increasing year after year, but we're not doing anything to decrease the car use. We're not improving public transport. We're not giving pedestrians, cyclists, micromobility users a space to move safely and leave their cars at home, sell them, or whatever. I mean, destroy them. So once you get, once you have less cars on the streets, then you you have less crashes, you have lower speeds. So we need to change things massively, but we need to start. So we haven't started yet. It's like that we're still doing what we have been doing for decades, and it hasn't been effective. I mean, on the other hand, who wants to sit in traffic for 2 hours a day?
No.
I mean, why are we wasting our time? And I was speaking to these French colleagues that we have in Nîmes. They were like, I mean, I told them, you know, schools finish at 1 o'clock. And they were looking at me and Natasha, my wife, and they were like, okay, which one of you is not working in the afternoon?
Yeah.
I mean, what happens with the kids? And then I told him, like, okay, we might spend like a couple of hours in traffic also. And we were thinking that if we could use this energy, this time, to do better at home, mm-hmm. at work, or even volunteering, making our cities or our country a better place. Why are we wasting so much time, so much money to drive around from A to B and at the same time accepting that the result of driving from A to B might be a serious injury or even death? So we have accepted that a serious injury or a fatal crash is a result of us, of our decision to drive around, which is not our decision. I mean, we are forced to have two cars in every family and move around. So there are so many things to change, but I think what you said, Costa, is that things are not changing fast enough. And we're already decades away from where other small cities, and I'm not going to say countries, I'm going to say small European cities that we can compare with Cyprus and Nicosia and Limassol. I visited France, Portugal, Spain, the Czech Republic, Greece. I've done like 15 trips in the last 2 years. And you can, whenever you visit a city in Europe, you can immediately see that every excuse that we hear in Cyprus disappears. you can see in front of you that there are no excuses. Like a small city, it's the weather, it's buses, or it's the cars, or people are not working, or it doesn't make sense.
They have vision and they deliver.
Yeah.
And yes, there are going to be some people kicking and screaming that won't like it at the beginning, but those voices get silenced once they see the change in the reality and the improvement.
Yeah.
Look, I can't thank you enough for the work that you do. I can't thank you enough for you and your team and everyone at Cedides as well for what you do for Cyprus, for our children, and for ourselves. I speak on behalf of everyone when I say thank you for contributing to potential for a vivid, drastic improvement on our roads. I do wish you Godspeed, as they say, that I do hope that we see some more tangible changes in the near future. I do call on the authorities to step up, take things seriously, move forward, engage the stakeholders, make the changes, do the enforcement, but understand the game.
Yeah.
And I want to see you guys right at the forefront, continuing to do your campaigning, your pressuring, and hopefully next time we have this discussion, we have some more positive things to say.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Look, I must say that most of the things that happened in the last years wouldn't have happened if it wasn't the Australian High Commission and you personally. So you know that we have done a lot of things together, a lot of events, a lot of invitations, a lot of discussions, a lot of actions. So I'm accepting your thank yous, but I'm reversing them to you. It's important that this is a result of a collaboration.
Mm-hmm.
It's also important to say that yes, we're expecting an inclusion in this effort. It might not be me in the near future, but there are other people to engage. And of course, I will be here and I will be available to help, even if I'm not in Cyprus. So, yeah.
Thank you so much, Yasunas. And again, like I said, next time we speak, let's hope for some more good news.
Sure. Thank you very much.
The first trilingual podcast station of Cyprus, Island Talks. Open. Diverse, free.